So we've been talking all hour about the issues of judicial treatment of detainees at Abu Ghraib and other places. It's turning out to be a very big issue in the early days of the Obama administration, and particularly about the photos that Barack Obama does not want to have released to the public, photos that have been sued for release by lawyers, including the American Civil Liberties Union, photos that have not been seen in the public, and which, according to the ACLU, show that there was a culture of utter permissiveness in the abuse of prisoners at Guantanamo Bay. Here's the president talking about his reasons for not releasing these new photos.
It's therefore my belief that the publication of these photos would not add any additional benefit to our understanding of what was carried out in the past by a small number of individuals. In fact, the most direct consequence of releasing them, I believe, would be to further inflame anti-American opinion and to put our troops in greater danger.
Here in the studio is Philip Gurevich, who's the co-author of The Ballad of Abu Ghraib and editor of the Paris Review. He's seen lots and lots of these photos, and we asked him to talk with us for a few minutes about the context of what Barack Obama has decided to do, not release photos. It seems to me what we're seeing here, Philip, is the inherent contradiction between trying to project transparency in a new administration and trying to improve America's image in the world, which is also a major mission of Barack Obama. Are these contradictory, irreconcilable in some way?
Well, no. I think that a certain degree of transparency and improving America's image in the world, specifically as it pertains to the issue of torture and the practices of the Bush administration's torture policy during the war on terror, they go together very well. One should remember that what he's trying to do is balance those conjoined purposes with ramping up the war in one of its hot theaters in Afghanistan along the Pakistan border, where he's actually increasing the troop numbers and in a dangerous situation. And so he's talking to military advisors, and he's saying, look, there is a possibility, and this seemed to have been agreed upon by everybody, including most reporters who were in Iraq at the time that the Abu Ghraib photographs came out, that the release of such photographs would not change or add to our understanding that this was policy, that it was widespread, and that we now know more and more and more about torture. And yet it would have a sensational effect and a possibly inflammatory effect that would endanger people.
How do you know that or come to that conclusion in the amount of the photographs that you've looked at? Because you've looked at an enormous number of these.
Well, the photographs themselves don't endanger anybody. It's the practices that are depicted in the photographs that endanger the troops, presumably, because what they show you is that America's engaged in systematic physical and psychological abuse of captured people, some of them combatants, some of them innocents, in the countries where we're fighting these wars. When the Abu Ghraib photographs came out, they performed a tremendous public service. Whether or not that was the intention of the soldiers who appeared in them and took them, their release ran directly against a policy of deception and secrecy of the administration, whose policies it was to create this permission and have these practices taking place in all of the prisons that they were running for interrogation. Now it's a different story.
But I wonder, if that argument had been made to you and Errol Morris, who collaborated on a movie which showed a lot of these photos, if they had made the argument to you that, no, actually, having these photos in the hands of a filmmaker, even a talented, sensitive writer such as yourself, would endanger the troops. It would not serve any purpose. We know the abuse took place, period. That's the end of it.
You know, the argument was made the same that the photographs endangered the troops by the Bush administration. The interesting thing is that they have a contradictory logic. Cheney's out there right now saying that these practices, the torture, made our troops safer. And now he's also tried to say that the photographs made the troops more dangerous. The Bush administration put all of the focus on the photographs. In their mind, the crime at Abu Ghraib was the photographs. Mm-hmm. The only people who've ever been punished for Bush-era torture policies are the soldiers who appeared in and took the photographs at Abu Ghraib. Nobody else.
No commanders.
No commanders. Nobody in any other theater. Nobody in any other prison in the theater. Nobody at any other stage. The photographs became the crime. And in fact, part of the problem is when we see photographs, we have this illusion that we know what we're seeing. We think that we know the whole story. And the expose ultimately became something of the cover-up at Abu Ghraib. And I think the notion that we should get so caught up right now in thinking that without these photographs, we don't know what happened. That's not true. Without these photographs or with these photographs, what we need to keep doing is chipping away towards knowing more and more and more and putting that picture together, which, frankly, the Obama administration has led us on more than the press, more than any advocacy group in the last few months.
You know, Philip, though, there is an essential mystery, and I wonder if you agree with me on this, and I don't know if any photo resolves it, and that is, why did they take the pictures? Why did each soldier take the picture? Did you puzzle on that?
I wrote a lot about it in the Ballad of Abu Ghraib. They had different motives, which is often the case. You have a group of half a dozen people, and they have a half a dozen reasons. One of the main group of Abu Ghraib photographs was largely taken by two people. One of them was a young MP named Sabrina Harmon. And in civilian life, her aspiration was actually to become a forensic photographer, a crime scene photographer. She liked to look at things and take photographs of things that puzzled her and that troubled her. And when she arrived at Abu Ghraib and was put on this military intelligence, high-value detainee cell block, she found all of these prisoners trussed, naked, bound in stress positions with panties on their heads, and she started photographing them. The early photographs are almost exactly like documentary photographs. Mm. And she started writing home, and we have these letters at the same time saying, this is the most troubling thing. Nobody would ever believe us if we didn't show you what it looks like. I have proof. And she started imagining, someday I'll show this to the world. Charles Grainer took the other bunch, and he appears in them, and he was much more into posing in the photographs himself. But he, too, kept saying, we have proof, we have proof. And he would show these photographs to his commanders. He'd say, is it okay if we do this? Is it all right if we do this? Some of those photographs that look like torture photographs are torture photographs. Some of them are photographs of mentally ill patients who were stuck on that same cell block, and they were trying to restrain from hurting themselves. They would take these photographs and show them to medics. They showed them to JAG lawyers in the military. These photographs had a lot of uses and abuses.
They're unmistakably and irrevocably a part of the discourse on what happened during the Bush years at Guantanamo and other places. Philip Gurevich, thanks so much for being with us. He's the co-author of The Ballad of Abu Ghraib and editor of the Paris Review. He also co-produced the film Standard Operating Procedure about these images with Errol Morris. Thank you, Philip.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.